This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good morning, everyone. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 102 of the Within the Trenches podcast, a podcast based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher. Now, this show is going strong, and while, you know, the stories are the main focus of the podcast, I also have 911 companies and organizations and such that are coming on the show to talk about what they are doing. You know, the way I look at it is if I can supply dispatchers out there who are listening with some free training through the podcast, why the hell not? I'm all about that, man. I'm all about pushing out that continuing education. I think it's a pretty important thing when it comes to a job like this. Now, the last episode, episode 101, I spoke with Eddie of St. Louis County, Missouri, and he shared his story as well as what it was like for him in the dispatch center during the Ferguson riots. So if you missed that episode, make sure to check it out. It was an excellent one. Make sure to listen and share. Just a couple things to go through before we get started here. The Sons and Daughters of Dispatch decals, those are up for round two. And that is because, well, people were sending me a bunch of emails and asking if they were going to be available for a second round. I let everyone know in a post that if there was enough interest that we would go ahead and do that. And, well, I ended up getting flooded with emails. So that was enough to let me know that there was an interest there. Like I said, second round is going. It's only available, though, for 2 weeks, and I believe the cutoff date for that is April 2nd. I'll make sure to post these links on the post for this episode on the blog on thejabberlog.com. And for the decals, they're 5x5 decals. They're $9.99 plus shipping. And a portion of the money that's made from that goes to fund a scholarship for the 2016 National NINA Conference in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now, also with that, I'm going to be posting up some links for t-shirts. And these are going to be some nice, soft, like vintage material type t-shirts that will have the Sons or Daughters of Dispatch logos on them. And a portion of the money from there goes to fund that scholarship as well. And as for the scholarship, if you're wondering, what it includes is a complimentary registration to the conference and expo. Also, as a registration for a one-day pre-conference course of your choice, a $500 travel stipend, and an official Within the Trenches t-shirt. So if you want to register for that, make sure to go to thejabberlog.com/scholarship/scholarship.php. And again, that is thejabberlog.com/scholarship/scholarship.php. And again, like I said in the last episode, the only reason that URL is that damn long is because I haven't had a chance to go and update the entire website. It's just this one, these two pages for the scholarship that have been completely updated. And if you ask me, it looks pretty damn sexy. So make sure to check it out and register. And it's an amazing opportunity. If you've never been to a national conference before, it's a great time. You know, you're there to learn, and just the networking alone with other dispatchers doing the same thing that you do is great. So make sure to check it out, register. You have until April 15th to do that. So last but not least, and I don't think I said it here, but I should have said in the beginning, this episode and all episodes are sponsored by InDigital. And InDigital is a leader in next-gen core services. So thank you very much, InDigital, for that. And now, for today's guest, he is known throughout social media and the blogosphere as Dispatch Monkey. But today, we find out who the man is behind the monkey, or curtain. And this person is a police dispatcher working from an agency in Western Canada, and his given name is Lloyd. How's it going, man?
Oh, it's going great. It's good to finally be on the show. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh, this is going to be good. We've been emailing, going back and forth. You know, I've been reading over your blog and stuff, and which we're definitely going to get to here. But you know, you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you're doing a lot of things, and I see you're talking a lot with the 911 Wellness Foundation too.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good as well. But before we get to all of that, we need to find out about the man behind the monkey.
Okay.
So, how did you start dispatching? And so you're out of Canada. So this is going to be even more interesting, because the last person that I spoke to who was out of Canada, it was one of the earlier episodes. Her name was Bobby. We were joking about how we get calls over here about dogs being in the yard, but over there, you know, you guys are dealing with bears and stuff. So it was funny to talk to her. But how did you get into dispatching?
Oh my goodness. You say the bear story. I've got a good one. So remind me to come back to that.
Yes.
Totally. No, I got into it. I used to be a long haul truck driver and used to drive all over the US and Canada. And, that was taking a toll on family time and such like that. So I decided that, you know, it's time to come home. It was either going to be my truck or my marriage. And I chose my marriage and my family over the truck.
Ah, good call.
Totally good call. I was actually celebrating 20 years this June with my wife.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Oh, thank you. My father was a police officer. He'd been on the police force for 27 years. I really only ever remember him doing police work, really. He started when I was four. And so I knew about the job of telecoms or dispatch or whatever you want to call it. And I thought, you know, that's right near home. It's in the city that I live in. I can do that. So I talked to my dad a little bit of what he thought about telecoms, and he's always had a great respect for his dispatchers, even though they called him at 2 a.m. for some, you know, horrific crashes. He used to do traffic reconstruction, but so went from there, applied for the job. You know, it took a while to go through the application. So in the meantime, I took a job at home, driving a local truck rather than over the road. And once they finally said, hey, you're accepted, your class date is September 2005, I was like, hey, right on. And that's how that happened. And I got into training in September 2005. So it's been quite the ride over the last 10 and a half years for sure.
Oh, man, I bet. So how long did that hiring process actually take?
For me, it took a little bit longer, because they said I had a health issue at the time. You know, I was overweight, and they're like, well, you got to have high blood pressure. And this doctor said, no, you can't do this job. There's no way. And I'm like, okay. So I appealed that. I got healthier and went up to see the police forces doctors again, because I had seen one in the city that they contract where I'm from. I appealed that, and the doctor's like, I have no issues. You know, you're healthy. You can do this job. And so I'm like, thank you very much. So for me, it took just over a year. Most times, a lot of my coworkers, it took about 6 to 9 months-ish to get through there. So it took a little extra time for myself. So,
man, and here I am complaining on other episodes that it took when I very first started in Florida, that it took them like 3 or 4 months. and yours was way longer than that. But you know what's funny is that the whole high blood pressure thing, when I first started out dispatching, I had like no medical issues, or at least nothing really big. But I ended up developing high blood pressure and acid reflux.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was nuts. And I remember going to the doctor once, because I was having like these heart palpitations and stuff. And well, on top of all of the stressful, crazy calls I was taking, I was also drinking a lot of Red Bull to, you know, stay awake on the midnight shift. So, that definitely was not helping. So I go to the doctor, and the doctor says, so you seem really stressed out. You have high blood pressure and you need to not be so stressed. You need to calm down. And he says, you know what, when you're at work, you need not to be stressed out. And I said, do you have any idea of what do you know what I do? I thought I told you what I did for a living. And he goes, no, what do you do? And I said, I'm a 911 dispatcher. And he goes, oh, well, yeah, I don't know what to tell you then.
He's like, you're screwed.
Yeah, exactly. Because maybe you should do like some yoga or meditate or something. I was like, man, I'll try anything.
But, yeah.
It's crazy the things that end up coming out with this job.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you speak of acid reflux. I developed the same thing. It sucks.
Yeah, I can't even explain it. I don't know how that all happened, but it happened and it bites, because now I still deal with it every now and then. I'm like, man, but
the joys of the job, eh?
Yeah. So the beginning, when you started out, so you ended up going through that whole long process and everything.
Yeah.
And but, you know, you at least had the experience of your dad being in law enforcement. So you kind of knew what was going on. But was it harder for you or easier for you when you went into the actual dispatch center to start training?
Well, I think it was easier for me because mm-hmm. I knew what to expect to a point, and I stress that to a point. I knew that they were the ones who called my dad out in the middle of the night. And when I talked to dad about, you know, certain things about, you know, what happens when you're in a pursuit, do you know what happens when a call comes in? And he was able to fill me in on some of that stuff. Of course, he's on the other side of the radio, right?
Right, yeah.
So I went in, you know, with somewhat open eyes and understood to a point. So I think it made it a lot easier. I was also really keen about going and doing sit-alongs too. So prior to class starting, I went in probably for a half a dozen or more sit-alongs. And that actually helped ease as well, because I knew a little bit more what was coming and stuff like that.
Yeah, so that's one of the key things there for those that are listening, whether you're in the general public, somebody who is thinking of getting into this profession, sitting in with somebody is key because you got to know what you're going into. You can't go in thinking, man, I can do this. You know, it's just phone calls. I've talked to people on the phone before and I've given them hell and stuff, but no, it is completely different when someone is calling you because you know, their infant is not breathing or a kid is choking or something, or, a loved one, something that's going on, nothing can really prepare you.
So. No, not it. You know, that I've seen trainees come up that had no clue what they were getting into. And, you know, they made the decision not to carry on with the career in dispatch. And, you know, that's completely fine. It's definitely not for everybody.
Right. Yeah, there were some people that that you know would come in and they thought that they were going to do it all, and they were acing little tests here and there, and going through memorizing the geography and everything of the county. But then once they put them on the phone, it was completely different, and they were out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's to the academics to the actual application are two different things. You can learn all the book smarts. You can do excellent on all the tests. But once you take that first real call, the one where, like you said, the child is choking and is blue, or somebody's just been held up at a store, with anything like that. Once you take that first real call, things change, and that's when your training takes over. But right. Sometimes some folks, they just don't get the connection of the training and the practice to the practical application.
Yeah, exactly. And, I will be mad enough to say that when I started out in the last PSAP that I was in, Allegan, I went through the first part of the training and it was easy because I had the training already, the experience rather. But when that first call came up, and because the center was a lot bigger, when I started out, it was a small dispatch center and just a small police department. It was just one dispatcher for every 8-hour shift. And the call volume was pretty much nothing. There wasn't a lot of calls that came in, so it was rather easy. However, when I made my switch, when I moved back to Michigan and I was part of the bigger dispatch center, that first call that I ended up taking, because it was going to hell in dispatch, it was crazy in there. And then my first one was a domestic call, and my trainer's sitting there and she's like, keep going. I was like, I don't know. I can do this. I cupped the phone. I was like, this is crazy. So you might have to break in. She goes, no, you've got this. You can do this. And I finished it. I was able to do it. And it was good from there.
Yeah. She was probably looking at you like, yeah, he's got experience. Sure.
Right. Yeah. I thought he had done this before. Yeah. I'll never forget that first one, man. That one was crazy. I started sweating. And she looked at me, was like, you know, I'm going to beat you down if you don't take this. So you've got this. And I did it. I finished it. Everything was fine after I got past those first little, butterflies or nerves, more like pterodactyls that were in my stomach at the time. But
pterodactyls.
Yeah. So what was your training like then? Because if you had to wait almost a year to even find out that you got the job, how long was the training then? Was it like, I think our training was between 3 and 6 months. So how did the training go for you?
Back when I started, we multitasked and did call taking and dispatch. So we learned in the classroom everything all at once. So the training at that point in time, so back in 2005, you know, it was 9 weeks of classroom learning. Mm-hmm. And then in the 10th week was all the exams and stuff. So the practical exams, the written exams, just everything in that 10th week. After that, then we were kicked up to the floor with a coach and with that umbilical cord plugged in.
Oh,
yeah, exactly. I heard you
cord.
Say umbilical cord on another one, and I was like, that's what we call it too. but anyways, yeah, I had the umbilical cord, and back in 2005, our training wasn't as structured. It was still very structured, but not like it is now. It's gone through quite a change. So, usually a minimum of 3 sets. So, and we worked 12 hours, so 4 on, 4 off, 2 days, 2 nights. 12-hour shifts. And so we would do 3 sets. Sometimes the coach, if they felt the trainee was doing well, they would, cut them loose to close supervision after 1 set or 2. Sometimes it took longer. For me personally, I took a longer time. Mm-hmm. At that point, I was like, what the heck? Why am I not getting signed off yet? And I was worried about it. What am I doing wrong? What's happening? And so I went, probably 5 sets, and then they said, we're going to put you with another coach. Went with that other coach and everything was fine. Huh. Now our phone system was changed over back in about 2011 or 2012. So they split the call taking and dispatch. So now the trainees go through 5 weeks of classroom call taking training. They learn everything about how to deal with the callers, what you're going to expect. This is our CAD system, how to run it and operate it. Then they come up, they're put to the floor. They're plugged in direct with the umbilical cord for 100 hours on the floor. And then there's another 200 hours after that of close supervision and such like that. Then they do an evaluation at the end of that 300 hours. And they're either, you're proficient or you're not, and there's something to work on, and they continue, or they're cut loose and they're signed off. So there's that length of time is now set in stone. You have to go through the 100 hours of direct, the 200 hours of close supervision for 300 hours. And then once they've been signed off and call taking, depending on the time of year, if it's busy or not, like if we're heading into the summer, a trainee or a new call taker who's just been signed off is going to call take all summer. They're not going to see a dispatching class until fall. And then dispatching is the same, but it's 3 weeks long, but the same number of hours all plugged in.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's, man, I think that's probably the most elaborate amount of training that I've ever heard of. But that's good though. I mean, that gets people prepared because
absolutely,
you know, you don't want to waste all that time on training and time and money, of course, on the training and stuff, and then find out, you know, it just didn't work out. And then what do? Then you have to start the process all over again.
Yeah. And, you know, so like I said earlier, sometimes that happens. There's been some people that decided once they hit a live action, they didn't want to do it. And that's fine. Again, that's completely fine. But everyone, like right now, our recruiting has been pretty intense. We're trying to find the right people. Our management has been doing really great. And lately, our trainees have been staying. We've found some really good quality people through the process because now they make it through and they're like, I've accomplished something. You know, I'm not going to leave this now. You know, I 300 hours of training and stuff like that, just that on the floor, plus all the classroom time, you know, I they're staying.
Well, that's good. That's definitely good. Yeah.
Yes, definitely, because our center has been understaffed for a little while. And so, of course, you know, it's made up with overtime and such like that. And, you know, we get the job done. I mean, because that's what we do. We're professionals, right?
Exactly.
So our manpower is definitely improving. We're getting some good quality people in there. And it's just really the morale is picking up. At least I feel personally my morale is picking up, which, you know, will eventually, you know, other people are feeling it too. So it's good. Our management has been really good about that.
You know, that's a big thing that people need to remember too, is morale, you know, and staffing issues. So, how many dispatchers do you have there before I get to what I was going to say? How many people do you have?
Well, we have four watches or teams. Each one has roughly 12 people on it, including two supervisors. That'd make about 14. So 12 to 14, ish. So maybe 40, 50, 60 people altogether, including management, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So we, at the last PSEP I was at, I think when we were just about full, we had about just over 20 dispatchers. Okay. But at one time, when I had first started there in Allegan, and if my former bosses ever hear this, they'll laugh because I would always reference this when talking to people that were just coming in, and they would, you know, some of them would say, so, you know, what kind of time off do we get? Or, you know, what about this and that? Or like, they didn't tell you, like, you don't get any time off. You're
I'm
stuck.
Off with that.
Yeah. What is that? But there was a time when I had first gotten off of training, and I was no longer part-time, I was full-time. We were very, very understaffed. I can't remember now if there was only 10 or 12 of us trying to fit these spots. And excuse me, for the overtime that they would give us, you know, we would have this Forsen list. And if you were at the very top, you know, they would call you if you were at home. And if you didn't answer, whoever was there working at the time, they would have to split that shift. Well, when we were so understaffed at that time, people were calling in and taking it as a force. So then they would move to the bottom of the list. But the bad part about it was that as soon as you walked in for that forced in overtime, you were getting forced in for like two more shifts because there wasn't enough people to work. And morale was so low. I mean, we were down at the bottom. That year was the only year that the county allowed us to let our vacation time roll over because no one got vacation.
Right.
There was one guy, however, there was one guy who he went to Florida every week and he called in sick that entire time. But when he returned, he had a nice, crisp, golden tan, which you can't get in Michigan during that time. So we could only assume what happened, but it was pretty funny. But the morale thing is huge. I mean, I used to tell people in dispatch all the time, you know, the way I act it ends up rubbing off on you. And they would say, no, it doesn't. And I said, okay. I said, think about this. If I come into the dispatch center being your supervisor and I'm all happy-go-lucky and let's rock, let's do this, let's kick ass and take names, you guys are going to feel that. You're going to want to do the same thing. But if I come in and I'm being a punk to you or I'm just not talking, you're going to feel that as well. And everybody else is going to follow along.
And that's right.
Yeah, morale is a huge thing.
Yeah, I think in my 10 and a half years, I only remember one summer where we were voluntold.
I'd like that, voluntold. I got to remember that. That's a good one.
So, it was like, okay, you're coming in for overtime here. And they scheduled our overtime. Now I can pick and choose my overtime to a point. I mean, they put it out. These are the shifts. If you're quick on the draw, you can get the good ones.
Right.
I usually like to take one, a night shift after a set or a day shift before. I don't like splitting up my days off so much, but if there's nothing else, then, I'll take it. But that one summer where we were under the voluntold overtime, it was, the morale was, like, I'm not going to get to go away. It just didn't get away from work.
Yeah, exactly. It just keeps going and it just keeps piling up and the stress is there. And what do you do?
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. However, my higher ups at that time were, because morale was so low, they were trying to think of anything, any little thing that could get it to bring us all together. So they made, because everybody had their own shift team, each shift team had to post something on a board. Like, I don't know. I think we put up there some old pictures of us. So pictures of us as kids and up through high school and stuff. So that was actually kind of fun. But then after that one project, then it was back to the same BS again. I was like, that didn't last too long.
At least you had somewhat of a reprieve. I mean, they thought of something. Hey, let's try and get the morale up, and that's good on your management for recognizing that.
Yes. If only they would have kept it up though. That's what we wanted. Yeah. It was just like, come on, keep on going. What else can we do next? And then stuff just got too busy around there and that was it. There was a disconnect between dispatch and upper management. And it was almost as if we were, the line had been drawn, it's us versus them almost, there weren't any battles or anything like that, but it just seemed like that. That was how it was going, but we got through it. So,
we're professionals, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We do what we have to do. I mean, I have this, t-shirt that I'm going to bring out soon, that says work hard, play hard, dispatch, which is
nice.
Pretty much, we do what we got to do.
Exactly.
So your first call, do you remember your first call by any chance?
I don't remember my first call specifically. What I do remember, I was thinking about it last night and I'm like, what happened? Oh, and I went, the light bulb came on and it wasn't my first, but it was in my first set. So I'm sitting there taking this call and the phone rings and I'm like, say my bit and they go into, my neighbor's house is being broken into. I see these people doing it right now. And I froze. I just I looked at my coach and my eyes were as big as saucers, like a deer caught in the headlights. I'm like, okay, what do you see? And, I didn't know what to do.
Right.
And everything just left me. And my coach, slides me out of the way. She comes in, takes the call. It was no big deal for her, right?
Right.
But for me, I don't know what it was. It was just like, oh, my gosh, somebody's breaking into your neighbor's house. What? We got to catch them. And I just froze. Now it's like, okay, sure. take the information, dispatch it off. I mean, it was just the funniest thing. And that has stuck with me. And just that feeling of like, oh no, what do I do?
Did you ever hear back? Did they ever play back that call for you or anything?
Yeah, I had to listen to it.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
It was a little embarrassing. You know, there was the, kind of response to it and dead air. Oh, dead air. I hate dead air.
You know, that's one of those things that always stick with you, because I know I've taken a couple calls that I actually had to listen to, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, if only I had a DeLorean and the flux capacitor in it, I could travel back in time and tell myself, hey, it's okay, man. You're going to be all right. Just do what you got to do. Uh-huh. Because, then I think about it. But, you know, it also helps me, you know, to not do it again, or at least try not to do it again.
Yeah. Would your past self have believed your future self, though?
Right, exactly. That's a good point, because my past self, my ego would probably have been like, man, what are you talking about? I'll be fine. And then, it'll just repeat itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. I think back to that and I was like, I was horrible. No wonder I did extra coaching.
Well, and when you were talking about that, I was going to ask you if the extra coaching, if they hadn't released you, if it was because of the fact that before you switched to the other one, if it was only because they wanted you to do something that, you know, their way and not your way. Because when I was in training, and I know I've told this story many times, but, you know, we had three different trainers, and the first trainer I had taught me one way and then also told me, if you figure out a way to do it yourself that's faster than how I'm doing it, do it your way, you know, because that's the one that you feel comfortable with. Well, then the next trainer ended up, you know, kind of marking me down because I wasn't doing it the way she wanted it done. And it turned into a big ordeal. So I was wondering if that's what you were going to say was, you know, it was because the trainer that you had or coach at that time was wanting you to do it their way instead of your way.
Well, I don't know if it was so much that, to a point it was like, you have to do it this way. And she was, you know, stressing things we learned in class. And I think I was just a little slow on the uptake of coming to the practical application of things. But now, like looking back at it, I look and go, that was probably the best thing for me, was to finish up with my coach, my trainer, mm-hmm. the first one, and move on to the second one, because that kind of, it knocked me down a peg. And, you know, in the ego thing, like the whole future self believing your past self, believing your future self idea, right. Like the ego you were mentioning.
Yes.
It knocked me down. And I was like, OK, I need to pull up my bootstraps or I'm not going to have this job for very long.
Right. A little slice of humble
pie. Second coach. And he just showed me a few tricks that was like, if you can figure out a faster way to do it, go for it. Built on the foundation that I had with my first coach, and I did two sets with him. So, and got signed off after. So I only did the two extra sets of shifts and then was signed off. So yeah, it was a good thing for me for it to happen that way.
It's always a good lesson to get a nice slice of humble pie sometimes because.
Yes. And my first coach is now my supervisor on my watch. And she's a great supervisor too. She doesn't, you know, micromanage. She lets us do our thing. She steps in when she needs to, mm-hmm. and she's very supportive, which she, looking back in coaching, she was the same way. So it's kind of funny. It's how it came around when she came onto our watch. It was like, oh, hey, this is interesting, you know, and it's worked out just fine.
That's good. And for those who are listening, if you think that you're badass and all, dispatcher, you probably are. However, one of these days, something is going to bring you down a peg, and it's just a learning lesson. So be prepared.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that is your PSA from, no, I'm just playing. What about any calls that you took or that you've taken either in the past, you know, currently or something that, not currently, but something recent rather, that had a significant impact on you. Have you had any of those calls?
Oh, yes. Now we're going to get to the downer part of the show. Like your guest Eddie said the other day.
Right.
I had a call back in 2013 that was the worst call of my career. I took the phone call. I started my thing, and the caller was this fellow in his 60s, and he had informed me that he was on his way to his parents' place for dinner. And when he got there, he found that they had been victims of a home invasion, a very violent home invasion, in fact. His dad, I could hear on the phone, like he was on the porch with his dad. His dad was struggling to breathe and get up. And just the sounds of that was just, I'll never forget it. It was just, it was like terrible. Of course, by this time, like I had, you know, it's been a number of years. This is now 2013. 2012 it was. You know, training takes over and I'm doing great. I was on the phone for nearly 20 minutes with this fellow. I hot dispatched it. Like I got it sent over to my dispatcher as fast as I could with, you know, the pertinent information to get the officers rolling. Mm-hmm. You know, I made sure that, you know, we need EMS now, like right now. And, so they called the EMS dispatch to get them going out there as well. During the call, this fellow's wife had located, his mom, and apparently, you know, she was at the basement of the house and we didn't know what kind of condition she was in. And it was just, one of those situations that if I could have come through the phone to help you out, I would have, but the unfortunate thing was just like all of us dispatchers experience at some time is like, the sounds are just something we'll never forget. And on this call, we were getting updates, like after I finished, we're getting updates throughout the night from the officers because the dispatch, she was sitting near me. She was like, okay, they found the car, like, cause the suspect beat them up, stole the car. They found the car, then they were doing a search. Finally, they found out who the guy was. And they caught him. But at the end of my shift, I was on an overtime, by the way, like I'm working an 8-hour overtime. This is 2 a.m. comes around and I'm starting to get ready to, you know, go home and such. And my dispatcher says, I just got an update that they might not make it. And I was like, what?
Oh, man.
And it felt like I got hit by a Mack truck. I started crying. I couldn't stop that emotion from coming out because I realized that the man I was trying to help, if I'd only gotten him help sooner, would he live? Turns out they did, thankfully, but it was very touch and go because they were quite elderly and EMS had to intubate and that's never good for an elderly person,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. And I broke down. I couldn't handle it at that point. And I still look back on that and feel quite embarrassed by it. But my supervisor that was on the floor at the time with that shift, he was awesome. He said, Lloyd, let's go talk. We went into his office. He said, you know, what happened? Well, he had listened into part of the call from his workstation. Mm-hmm. And he said, you did a good job. You did everything that you possibly could do. And just, and gave me that assurance as much as he could that we had done everything possible to help them. And then from there, he says, if you need help, let us know. You can come in and we can send you to talk to somebody. You know, we have our EAP employee assistance program. I think every dispatch center does, but he's like, you know, if you need to talk to somebody, let me know. A few days went by and I wasn't sleeping. I was having nightmares. I was envisioning, you know, the scene. It's kind of weird. It's hard to explain to somebody who's never dispatched, what it's like to hear things and be in the situation but not see it.
Right.
And your mind fills in the blanks. And I was having terrible nightmares. And finally, my wife says to me, "You're really having some problems. What's going on?" And I kind of gave her a little bit of lowdown without too much detail. She goes, "You need to talk to somebody." And I took that as my cue. And I went into, it was my day off. I went in and I said, "You know, I need to talk to somebody." So I went and talked to management, and like within 2 days I was on, I had an appointment with our police force psychologist who, referred me to a stress injury clinic. And, that was, probably one of the best things that happened for me, because I learned how to deal with that, call, and whatnot. And, you know, that, I don't know, man, that call is stuck with me to this day.
That
I'll never forget it.
That gives me goosebumps. It's like, seriously, yeah. It does, because, I've dealt with the same thing. Not the exact same, you know, story, but, you know, something to the similar, you know, magnitude that, you know, your imagination, it's crazy how your imagination when listening to everything is probably, or can be much worse than seeing it right in front of you, because you're trying to imagine every single thing that is going on while you're hearing it. You're also typing it, and you're trying to get all this information out, and it's, the adrenaline is kicking and it's going nuts. And I know exactly what you mean. There was the last week that I was in dispatch, I had taken a call, and it seemed like the dispatch gods or goddesses, whichever, were throwing every single thing at me for my last 2 weeks in dispatch, so that, you know, I could just take care of whatever I had to take care of. But, you know, and I've told this story a lot of times, but I can relate exactly to what you're saying with this call, because whenever I see a blue Toyota Tercel, it has an impact on me because of this call that I had taken, where this guy showed up at a friend's house, and he was just, you know, I had put it in as, you know, somebody who was just there out of control. It wasn't a domestic or anything. He just showed up, and there was nothing physical, but he showed up and he was just saying a bunch of stuff and yelling and everything. And these people called because he was out of control, but he had left. And I said, "Well, what did he leave in?" Because I thought he was still there. I said, "What did he leave in?" And they said, "Well, he was in a blue Toyota Tercel. And by the way, he said he was going to go kill himself." And I said, "Oh, okay. You probably," in my head, I was thinking, "You should have told me that in the very beginning of this call, instead of, you know, telling me at the very end, because that completely changes the entire call. You know, the information would have been toned out immediately." But this was just, you know, somebody who was out of control and was no longer there. And so it's not as high of a, you know, priority complaint. But I got his phone number. And of course, I had, you know, what he was driving and such, and his name and everything. And I got off the phone with her, and I put the information in, and we toned it out to that to the area of that address. And I ended up getting a phone call right after I called this gentleman. So I call this guy, and the phone rings once, and then my screen just gets flooded with 911s. And I thought, well, he's not answering. So I just hang up. I pick up the phone, and this person on the line says, "There's a car that just ran head, you know, straight into a tree." And I remember my breath was like taken away. And I sat there for a minute and I said, "What location are you at?" And he told me, and I started looking at the map and I thought, this is not far from that house. And I said, "Can you go up there without, you know, if there's no danger or anything, can you walk up to the car and let me know how that person is?" And he goes, "Sir, there's no way that this person lived through this." He goes, "But I'll go look." And I said, "What kind of car is it?" And as he said, blue Toyota Tercel, I was lipping it. And I just, my heart sank. And I called over to the radio dispatcher and said, "You know, I'm pretty sure this is my guy who had just taken off from there." And sure enough, it was. But I was thinking in my head, what if they would have told me that faster? Would I have been able to get a hold of him on the phone and talk to him and maybe stop that. And I was looking at the map and I was trying to figure out how far everything was, and it was nuts. But like you know, in your imagination and everything, it screws us up. And a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. That what ifs, what if I had been able to do this, or what if I had said, stay in your car? Like, I had a call with the what ifs, and this one was back to 2014. Mm-hmm. It was a really bad weather that day. It was snowing. I could take this 911 call from this lady who ran into the back of a semi on the highway. Now, because they were going slow, thankfully it wasn't all that bad, but she had her kids in the vehicle and they were okay. And then she says to me, I'm just concerned we're going to get hit again because visibility was so poor. And so I'm taking the information. They were on the side of the road. Like, they had pulled, like they were able to pull off. And she says, we're going to get hit. We're going to get hit. And she starts to yell into the phone and scream. And then I hear screeching of tires. I hear a collision, another vehicle hitting like something. And it turned out it was her son. They were out of the vehicle. So I've often thought to myself, what if I had just asked or instructed to say, stay in the car? And that call was the one that every time I get a collision now, I ask that question because of that call.
Wow.
Yeah. And the boy lived. Thank God he lived. He got had the saving grace. For him, I found out from the officer who attended, who's a friend of mine. He said, yeah, you know what saved him? When the car went over him, the snow was so deep, he got pushed into the snow. And it cushioned him. He had a broken leg, and that was it. But still, I thought the boy had died. And that what if has stuck with me since then.
Now, I can't imagine the relief that you had when they ended up saying he's alive. And to sit there and think, man, that kid is lucky. But
yes. Oh. Yeah. It was like a weight got lifted off my shoulders, but I still blame myself. And that's something I still struggle with now. And, you know, I'm talking to somebody about that in particular as well. Because my mental health is, you know, it's ultra important for this job. So we got to keep up on our mental health, and talk to somebody. And I am seeing somebody. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'm seeing a psychologist to talk about things that I've dealt with. And, you know, that's a good thing to do. And I wish more dispatchers would do it. And if there's anything that I can say is take care of yourself. You have to be number one for your mental health. If you need to take time off because of something that happened at work, take it.
That is damn good advice there. And people who are listening, take that advice. Because mental health is key. We have to keep you healthy. You know, I always told people, you know, because they would say, so why do you do the job? I was like, well, it's definitely not for the paycheck because I don't get paid that much money. But, you know, I like helping people. I like doing what I do. But, you know, for me, I've admitted it many times too on the podcast. In the beginning, I didn't talk to people, you know, I kept it in, and then I finally started talking to people and it worked out. I was able to get it out. But what helped me get it out even more was writing, which is where all of this came from. You know, I started blogging about it, and this is probably a good segue as well from what we were talking about into how you started. Cause I mean, you blog as well. So do you talk about, different calls that you had taken? I mean, how did you get your idea for Dispatch Monkey and to, start writing and stuff for the blog?
Well, Dispatch Monkey actually started, from a call involving a monkey, an imaginary monkey, mind you, but it was still a monkey nonetheless. here we go into the funny stuff again, which is, like you said, a good segue. My partner had taken a call one night from this lady who thought there was actually a monkey in her house, and that her husband had brought it back in his suitcase from a holiday. And this monkey was eating all of the dog food and stuff. Actually, it came from the veterinarian who was concerned about this lady because she brought her dog to him thinking the monkey had been biting him. So that's how I came up with the idea. I'm like, gee, everybody needs a monkey. And I wish I had a monkey. And,
you know, awesome.
that's just how he started. And so he's taken, I thought, man, I could make, you know, these little pictures and posters and I made a couple up and shared them with my coworkers and emailed a couple of them off to some officers that are friends. And the one officer, she says to me, you need to make a Facebook page for this guy. What do you call him? I'm like, well, Dispatch Monkey. And so that's how, you know, his Facebook page started. And I started taking little things like, you know, I made up one. The moment you realize your mute switch has been on for your entire transmission and I have my monkey with that kind of sideways, like, you know,
yeah.
Just little things like that. Or the moment you hear the officer's open mic and I've got the monkey smiling, because it's so funny when you hear an open mic.
Oh, of course. Right? Yeah.
And just things like that. And, you know, just some funny stories. One night I was working. It was a full moon, long weekend, Friday night.
Gotta love
and
those full
it
moons.
It was super busy. Like, we were so flying crazy busy. I finally get out on my break. I go down to my truck, turn on the radio, and the song that comes on was so appropriate. It's like, Welcome to the Jungle.
Oh, was, nice.
Oh, that couldn't have been any better. So I sat there listening to that tune and I'm like, I'm going to make up a, you know, poster for that. So I made up one for that. There's some other ones like, I put them out about, you know, on the holidays, like Happy Canada Day, Happy Independence Day, mm-hmm. Stay safe out there. National Telecommunicators Week. I've made up posters for that. Another funny story. I was dispatching this night and there was cattle on the highway. So I'm like, I'm going to have some fun with this one. So I dispatch and patrol, you know, there's this, these cows on the road refusing to move, you know,
right.
And the officer who took the call, he had a good sense of humor. He gets down to the location and he goes, dispatch, the cattle have moved on. They must have heard we were coming.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, you know,
just funny stuff like that. And, you know, so yeah. You know, I he evolved from, you know, it wasn't long after started the Facebook page that I'm like, oh, Twitter's kind of a cool thing, I guess. I never really tweeted before. Like, I had my own personal account, mm-hmm. which I didn't use a whole lot. But I'm like, okay, well, let's start, you know, a Twitter page for Dispatch Monkey. So I made it up and I cross post and he started to, you know, grow some followers and whatnot. I think, when I made him, I found your Twitter page and you followed me back right away. And
yes.
Like 911 Wellness Foundation, Ryan, who also has Operation 10-8 followed. And that's how I got connected with him. And as I was going along, this is where we're getting to the blog part. I was realizing things that, you know, there's a lot of, people, dispatchers, police, firefighters, EMS that I was following that were talking about mental health issues or just things coming up. I mean, I'm like, you know, I really wanted to, because mental health for me is important. I wanted to evolve it a little more from just the humor side of things to supporting these people and saying, you know, Thin Blue Line, Gold Has Your Back, and stuff like that. And articles, would retweet or repost articles that I found helpful for me. And then that's where I come to the blog. I'm like, you know, you have 140 characters in Twitter. You can't say a whole lot.
Right. Yeah.
Facebook takes time and, you know, not everybody sees it. So, you know, I can make a blog. So I started writing a blog that has a balance of, you know, I went to like a gala that was for PTSD and what these different services are doing for their people. And I blogged about that. That was one of my first articles, and I wrote about, you know, what these other services are doing, fire, police, EMS, even the military. And then just some other stuff. And then I thought, you know what, I can use the blog to expand on my funny stories. So there's a couple of them, the one story I wrote called Lost Drunk Love. Lost Drunk Love. I kind of took the play on that movie title, Punch Drunk Love.
Yes.
and we had this call. I wasn't the initial call taker on it. But this fellow had, you know, you can read it on the blog. This fellow, you know, he's lost. He's trying to walk home. And it's cold, but it's not very cold, but it's the time of night where things could turn very quickly. And so, of course, you know, that's pretty serious. We're you know, concerned about people's safety. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. And so it gets dispatched. The officers, you know, they do a patrol. They can't find him. They ask for a ping on his cell phone because the radius we had was ridiculously huge. Like, yeah. We're talking like 15 kilometers. So that's like 10 miles almost.
Oh, man.
And so in the midst of another dispatcher doing that, I get a call. And it's I quickly determined it was this guy on the phone. And I had a great radius. It was like 25 meters. I'm like, you're on the highway. And so I talked to him, and he says he wants to keep walking home. And I'm like, well, just stay where you are. What are you wearing? Because he's on the highway at night. Of course, he tells me he's wearing black clothes. I'm like, okay, well, I got to keep you safe somehow and convince you to just stay where you are, but go further into the ditch. The officers are coming. So, you know, we debated the merits of his personal safety in that aspect. Finally, he comes around and he's like, okay, I'll stay here. And I'm like, all right. So just to confirm, you're going to stay where you are. And, the officers will be there soon. Okay. He's like, okay, I love you guys too. I was like, I'm thinking about, did I just hear that? I'm like, pardon me. He goes, I love you guys too. And I'm like, okay, thanks. Bye now. Click. I'm on the phone, you know? So that's where the blog comes in. Cause I was able to go into detail about some of these stories. So I'm trying to keep a balance of, you know, the support for first responders, especially dispatchers, the mental health awareness, and these are things and links you can go to if you need help. And then just the funny stories, the funny stuff that, you know, we experience. You know, it's kind of like my book, I guess you could say, that I'm writing. You know, I'm not specifically writing a book, of course, but
right.
That's how the blog came about, you know? So it started with, you know, a couple posters or memes or whatever you want to call them with some coworkers, getting encouraged to make a Facebook page, then, you know, creating the Twitter, and then almost a year later evolving it to the blog because I felt I had more to say and more to share.
That's good. Cause that's the best way to do it. That's how I started, you know, is just writing out a bunch of stuff, and a lot of the funny was there, but I also wrote about, you know, the crazy real stuff that, you know, people wanted to know too. But
There's
one thing that I probably can't compare to because I don't think I've ever taken a call with a bear, but you said to remind you of a bear call. Yes. So hook
the
me
bear.
Up.
Well, being in Canada, we have bears.
Yes.
I was dispatching one day. And I was covering an area that, you know, has some mountains and some, you know, bear habitat area. And my call taker sends over this call, and I'm reading the dispatch. I'm reading the details on it. And I'm like, okay. And it's saying the caller was out for a hike and he stuck his head in a cave and there was a bear in there. And then the bear woke up. And I'm like, why was his head in the cave? And what did he do to wake up the bear? Because this is a hibernating bear. Like, it's winter still.
Right.
So, you know, it was a milder winter that we were having. And, you know, this bear woke up. And it took him this fellow two days to figure out who to call. I guess he tried to contact the wardens. And, of course, the warden's office was closed. But finally, 2 days later, he calls on 911 to say he stuck his head in this cave. And I'm thinking to myself, 2 days? Your head was in a cave? Now there's a bear out there that, you know, and he's like, I'm concerned for other tourists who might be hiking in the area. Yeah, good to know. Thanks. Yeah. So I dispatched it, and our officers were able to get a hold of the wardens, who are now aware of this now awake bear, who's probably going to be trying to forage for berries that are non-existent.
Right. You know?
So I ended up making a little meme about that. You know, why was your head in the cave? You know, what did you do to wake up the bear? You know, it's hibernating. Like, really?
What a fool.
Oh, like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, okay, yeah, if you see it, you stick your head in the cave, that's fine. I've done caving before, and caves are pretty darn cool. Stick your head in, you notice a bear, you back away.
Exactly. That's the common sense.
As quietly as you can. And I'm just imagining in my head this guy, hey, look, a bear.
Yeah. Like, hey, fella, what are you doing?
Wait, you're asleep.
Yeah. Oh. Why?
What, so a goof. Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's a funny story. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned bears.
It's you always want to say stuff to callers, and of course you can't, because we have to stay professional. But
yeah,
I know there's a lot of times where, you know, it was during hunting season, and people were always calling in on a BOL or a BOLO, a be on the lookout. For, yeah. It would be, you know, yeah, there's somebody walking on the side of the road. Okay, well, what is he wearing, or what is he doing? Well, the only thing that concerns me is the fact that he's carrying a rifle and he's dressed in camo. And In my head, I mean, I would have to lift the phone because I would chuckle. And in my head, I'm thinking, should I ask, how can you see him if he's in camouflage?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it being hunting season, you're like, he's probably a hunter,
right? Yeah. And I think out of that, I mean, of course he could be some crazy person or something, but, you know, he probably is not. He probably just is a hunter, and he's just walking to wherever he's going to go do what he's got to do, because he doesn't want to park somewhere or something. So he's just, you know, walking over there. But it would be hilarious, because I would always want to say, well, ma'am or sir, how do you see him that he's in camouflage?
That would be a good question.
Yeah. You know, it's along my line of questioning. I got to ask.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious. Like,
you should just see, like, boots and a rifle moving by itself. That's more concerning.
The invisible man. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, this has been an excellent episode. This has been a lot of fun recording with you. And I thank you very much for being on the show. We're going into the wrap up here. So if you could let the listeners know, how do they find you? You know, Facebook, Twitter, the URL for the blog. How can they get a hold of you?
You're right on. Cool. No, that, that's the Twitter. My Twitter page is @dispatch_monkey. And you can follow me there. I'd love to have more followers. I'm getting close to 1,000 people. Woo-hoo!
Right. Heck yeah.
That's a good number in the Twitter world.
Yeah.
So @dispatch_monkey, Facebook is just Dispatch Monkey. You can find him there, follow him. I'm up to 420 followers on there. Thank you, by the way, for the plug on episode 100. I actually jumped up about 30 people on just Facebook alone.
All right. Well, good.
Yeah. And then my Dispatch Monkey is the blog is dispatch dot, oh goodness me, dispatchmonkey.wordpress.com. There, I got it out. So dispatchmonkey.wordpress.com.
Awesome.
for the blog.
All right, excellent. So I'm going to make sure to post all those links as well on the post for this episode. So everybody, make sure to go there, check them out, follow, like, and subscribe to the blog as well. If you've got a subscribe there, right, a button.
Yeah, you can follow me on my blog, and you can you're allowed to make comments and stuff. You'll see a few comments on there and whatnot. So yeah, feel free. I answer back. You know, I'm all for that. You know, discussions and stuff. Yeah, it's great. I've also got links in a couple articles, like I said earlier, for mental health. If you need to find help, contact your local agency. But if you want some links, I've got them in an article right from the 911 Wellness Foundation and some agencies that deal with PTSD, etc. So if you need help, I can't stress enough, go get it. It is not a shameful thing to do.
Awesome. Thank you again for being a guest on the show. This was a really good time. We're going to have to record another one here soon.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to. That'd be awesome. Thanks for inviting me on. This is a great time.
Oh, definitely. And for those who are listening, if you have any questions or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email the show at wttpodcast@gmail.com. And just going through, just to recap some of the stuff from the beginning, the decals, those are up. I'll make sure to put the sons and daughters of Dispatch 911 original decal link for you to purchase. Again, they're only available until, I believe, April 2nd. They're just available for 2 weeks. I will also be posting up the links for the t-shirts, and those are brought to you by my excellent friend, Seth. He has Threads ET. Make sure to check him out. And he has been my t-shirt guy since the beginning. He does excellent work. So make sure to check them out. You can find them on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and they've got their own website as well. I believe it's threadzt.com. Either way, I'll end up putting those links in the blog post. The scholarship, make sure to go there. Again, an amazing opportunity for somebody to go to a national conference, 2016 National NINA Conference in Indianapolis, Indiana, and that is the jabberlug.com/scholarship/scholarship.php. Oof, man, I didn't bite my tongue that time when I said it. Also, thank you to our sponsor, InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services, and also check out Indiana NINA, and that is INNENA.org. They have their state conference coming up. There's going to be a lot of good speakers there. Jim Marshall with the 911 Wellness Foundation will be there doing a two-day class for pre-conference. And for the first 40 people, that class is going to be for free. So make sure to jump on that. After that, it'll be $189. And then the podcast will be there. We'll be doing the show the entire week, as well as on Wednesday, I believe it will be the day, probably around 1 p.m. or 2, something like that. I'll be there doing a live podcast. My talk will be Within the Trenches, open mic, and it'll be a live episode with the entire audience. So make sure to check that out. If you're going to be there, make sure you step in and step up to the mic, because we're going to have a lot of fun there. This episode can be found, heard, and available 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, and thejabberlug.com. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.